On this bonus episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we bring you a conversation from our pal, Sam Sanders. Sam recently had a wide-ranging conversation with the one and only Tracee Ellis Ross on his podcast, It's Been a Minute. They talk about her work on Girlfriends, Black-ish, and the recent film, The High Note, plus what it's like to be a Black creative right now. Take it away, Sam.
So I have something in common with Tracee Ellis Ross. Yes, the actress and comedian and now singer.
This is my buddy.
You're hiding behind one of the leaves.
My thriving fiddle leaf fig, yeah.
Tracee Ellis Ross and I both have fiddle leaf fig plants in our homes, and we both talk to those plants daily. What's their name?
She doesn't have a name, but she has identified herself as female. The other day, she dropped a giant leaf on my head, and it did not look like that leaf was ready to drop off. I think she was just trying to get my attention.
Tracee has been leaning into that friendship with her plant, and I have as well with mine, as we both try to figure out this weird moment of social distancing and isolation. Tracee told me she's learning a lot of things about herself right now, and she's sharing those things on social media.
I can be okay with discomfort. Like, just because, and by the way, people saying that they have been bored during this pandemic, I'm like, who, where, and where do you find that thing called boredom? Because I don't know about you, but there's floors to mop. There's always something to do to get done.
Yeah, you got time to lean. You got time to clean.
Hey, there you go. I've never heard that, but I'm with it. I'm snapping Sam.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders, and this episode, a wide-ranging conversation with the one and only Tracee Ellis Ross. I've been watching her on screen for years, from the sketch comedy The Lyricist Lounge Show to her sitcom Girlfriends.
Hey, I don't even know why I'm entertaining advice from you guys.
To ABC's Black-ish, a show that got her a Golden Globe.
Oh, God, I should have just told him.
On top of all of that, Tracee is a businesswoman. She owns Pattern Beauty. It's a hair care company for curly hair. And most recently, she played the lead in the new movie, The High Note. And in this film, she sings.
I forget when I was younger, it was easy.
We talk about her work and the purpose behind all of it. And what it's like to be a Black creative right now in 2020, still finding room for joy in spite of all the struggles of this year. All right, let's get to it. This is a fun chat. You'll enjoy it. By the way, you'll hear some leaf blowers over at Tracee's house at the start of this interview because she's stuck at home like the rest of us. All right, enjoy. It has been refreshing to see you have that candor about how you're living your life right now. Mm. You know, but I was thinking about, you know, getting used to this new normal.
Yeah.
I, for one, thought I was used to the coronavirus normal. Mm. And then the protest happened, and I'm like, I'm glad this is happening, but literally it was down the street from me because I live downtown.
Me too. It was right in my hood. Yeah.
Oh, man. And then on top of it, I noticed what happened with the protest is that every interaction I've been having with my friends and family and loved ones over the last few weeks has been different, especially with my white friends and loved ones. Mm. It has changed the way in which I speak in the world. Have you felt like that added one more layer of not quite normal on top of the already not quite normal?
Yeah, and also changed the whole framing and perspective for, oh my God, why is this happening? This is the worst year ever. And maybe it's, and in many ways, it is a really challenging and unprecedented time. But I also feel very conscious of the transformation that is at our feet and that by design, like all the work that has been done and is being done. I also think the pandemic has allowed a receptivity for what's happening right now in a different way, an ability for focus and attention so that there's no distraction on the reality of what's here. And I know that in many ways, a lot of the brutality and violence that we have witnessed most recently is new for a lot of people, but it's also not new for the Black community. So at first, my thought was I was heartbroken, then filled with, you know, it was like a jump between heartbreak and rage. And then I kind of moved into a state of anguish, I felt, a real place of Like, I just had no words. And, you know, social media is really interesting because it requires us to sort of perform our process in a way that has, it can be fun, it can be wonderful, it can create community. I think particularly during social movements, it's added a really important layer and dynamic of communication, but it also is performative to a certain extent.
There's a pressure to speak about everything all the time.
Before you've processed, before you've had time to process. And so there was like a full week, I was like, I can't find my feet. I don't know if you, like, I just felt like I couldn't find my feet. Like, I didn't feel grounded, and I realized, of course I can't find my feet. The foundation is moving underneath us, and that is a good thing. But as you dismantle these structures and as these, this historic rage, oppression, anguish, brutality, like all of those things start to come, be released out of the foundation that we're in, they're also being released through our bodies. And so finding ways to either be in movement, because I felt stuck. I don't know about you, just stuck.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
You know? So anyway, I could talk about this stuff forever.
No, I love it. Yeah. I am so interested in how and what kind of work creatives like yourself make out of this moment. I am sure that the last 3 months of American life have inspired so many ideas for screenplays or pilots or movies or something. In you just watching the world over the last 3 months, has it inspired you to make some kind of art out of this? And if so, what would that be? What would that look like, even through the channels you have now?
You know, it's interesting. The last few months has really just affirmed where my mission has been, you know. It didn't sort of turn up the volume on it. My mission, I feel, has always been around sharing the beauty, the joy, the power of Black women. Okay. And supporting ownership of our own narratives and the expansion of our equity, both on an individual and personal level, in how you invest in yourself and have your own power in your own life and inhabit your own skin with freedom and joy, whatever that means for you.
Yeah.
And also how we do that collectively in the world, how we support each other in doing that. So this time, both COVID, the uprising that's occurring now, the protest that's occurring, and the shift that is being pushed for and fought for only amplifies that urgency for me.
Yes.
It doesn't change that. The most fertile place for me has been through Pattern, through my hair company, in all honesty. I also, you know, I'm executive producing, I have about 5 projects that I'm executive producing, all of which are through that mission. But particularly with Pattern, it's been so exciting because the celebration of a beauty brand that's centered around Blackness, that doesn't change. The urgency of that doesn't change. Being a Black-owned business, the importance and the clarity of vision of that doesn't change. Being an active space where we can see ourselves in all of our humanity doesn't change.
Yeah. And like, only Black hair care does not sleep just because of a pandemic or a protest. You got to do your hair.
No, it does not. You got to do your hair. And by the way, it's one of the ways we get to honor ourselves. Mm. It's one of the ways we get to love ourselves. It's one of the ways that we have created through history rituals. I mean, Black women and hair have been at the center of movements and economic shifts and elections and political change and all of that. And so it has traveled through all of those spaces with great urgency, I think.
Yeah. And it's beautiful to watch. Like, I was watching the video yesterday of you and your mother going to a store, looking at the Pattern stuff laid out. You're doing a happy dance. And then I see you pick out something of your own line to buy as your mother looks on. And it's like, that is a power.
That is great. It's like mind-boggling.
You know, 2 generations of Black women owning their hair and their business. That's beautiful.
That's beautiful. It's so interesting. I've never quite, thank you for framing it that way. That's powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. It was yours and you were in charge of it. And to see you be not just the purchaser, but also the owner of it. That's cool. Mm. That's really cool.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. I don't take that lightly.
Speaking of, you know, the work, this does speak to a larger point that you've made in other interviews, in which the ways black TV and movies and black media is respected by the entertainment industry writ large. You said in an interview before that, you know, there are these waves and phases of celebrating black narratives. It seems as if we're going to be in a moment now where every studio, every network will want to make a black something. But the question is, how long will those things last?
It seems as if, but we don't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems as if we should have been doing this all along. Like, look at our world, guys. Look at what this looks like. We've been here. By the way, this is the other thing. I always say in terms of hair, I'm like, we've been beautiful forever. Our hair's been coming out of our heads like this forever. This is not new. Black girl magic might be a new term, but it's an old experience. Like,
exactly.
We've been here doing this. Our stories have been interesting. It's the same thing I said and what I meant at the Golden Globes. Like, it might be have been 35 years since a black woman was nominated or won, but it has not been 35 years since a black woman has been the lead in her life.
Mm-hmm.
That is not new information. We have been, it's lovely to see yourself in that way, but we've been here being incredible forever.
Yeah.
Telling our stories, being in our lives, running our lives, doing our lives. So that's not new.
You know, and like thinking about how, you know, this stuff is always there. It's just, do you appreciate it yet?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of what you said before about Girlfriends, one of my favorite sitcoms. Mm-hmm. Y'all were making that show for years and you couldn't get on late night, even though the show was incredibly popular.
No, sir.
It's crazy.
Is it though? it feels ridiculous and wrong and strange to say in your own space, sort of about yourself. You know, it's easier to say about other people. But yeah, there's moments when you go, huh? Like, I'm not joking you. I remember the feedback. I remember it specifically. It was, we love Tracy. Call us when she gets something.
You've been doing something. You've been working for a long
time. But I mean, I was the lead on a show at that moment, a show that had been on the air. So it was like, huh, what do you need to get?
Yeah. Do you think it's better now?
It's different. I don't think we're there, but we can see that we're not there by what's happening in our country. I feel very encouraged about what is happening right now. It also feels untenable and destabilizing, and but there are real structures in place and systems in place that continue to keep things as they are, and they need to change.
Yep. Yeah. Speaking of things that aren't limiting, your movie.
Yeah.
It was you and it was you and a Mo that I hadn't seen before, but I was into it. You're
Let
singing.
Me tell you something. I'm singing. That was an expression of true unbridled like freedom and joy for me. To walk through a fear and towards a dream like that was really spectacular and fun. And I love that the movie is a feel-good movie. There's no, like, you know, bad guy. Like, I'm the bad guy of sorts, but I'm also not a bad guy. Like, you know what I mean? Did you know? Let me tell you something, Sam. Let me tell you something that first time recording artist. I was on the charts. I don't know if I'm on the charts now, but I made it to number 20. Was the last I heard. I was 20 on the charts.
What?
20. Number
at you.
20. Yeah.
I'm
Love
giving
myself.
You snaps.
That's
you
right.
can see
That's
the right. snaps right there. Yes, 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 yes.
I forget when I was younger, it was easy. Yeah. Yeah.
And it wasn't just like you made 6 songs for this movie? You really did.
I think it was 5. I think it was 5. I did.
Okay.
I recorded 7 demos, but 5 completed.
Stop.
Yeah.
Wow. Did they have to sell you on it, or were you like, I'm going to just do this?
No, I fought for that part. I hounded them.
Really?
I wanted it. Oh, I chased that.
Okay. Tell me this story. I love this.
Again, back to Girlfriends. As Girlfriends finished, I thought the pearly gates of Hollywood were going to open, and me, this lead actress from a sitcom that had been on there for 8 years, was just going to be like scripts at my door, ready to go. What are the choices? Where's my big film? Am I going to be in a Marvel movie? What's happening? Talk to me. Tell me where we're going. And then it was like, hello? 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 Maybe they don't have my address. Anyway, so... the career continued and I kept doing the things that I do and being who I am. And then Blackish came along and, you know, we do 24 episodes. It's a single camera show. So we work a good 14-hour day often. It's 8 months out of the year. We're 4 months off from Black-ish. But it's real busy.
It's real busy. It's all consuming.
You know, this is the joke. You can see me, but the joke of this is what it's like at work. People are like, I know, but you always sit around. There's so much waiting. I was like, not on our show. This is me at work. Oh, you need me? Oh, yeah, I'm coming. Oh, yeah, now? Like, you never get to sit down. Like, there's no, it's not like you can, like, answer an email. Like, it's, none of that's happening.
You're on call for 14
you're
hours.
You're on call for 14 hours, and it's moving. We only get 30 minutes for lunch, which by the time you get to your trailer is 20 minutes. Like, that's it, you know?
So,
and that's not, it's not that I'm complaining, but I mean, it's full time.
You know what I mean?
So, by the time hiatus comes around, like, what do you want to spend your time doing? Do you want to sleep? Do you want to see your friends and family that you never get to see? Do you want to run your business? Do you want to, you know what I mean? Like, what do you, like my hair business? Like, what's happening? So I was waiting for the right project, and I hadn't been offered all these movies. So by the time I got to Black-ish, it was like, well, now I want to choose a good one. I don't just want to do any movie. You want to do a good one. You know what I mean? So when this script came by, I was like, this is, I want to do this. Like, I've always wanted to sing. It's been, it was a childhood dream that kind of got put on the back burner, consciously, unconsciously, I don't know. It became scarier and scarier the longer I waited. I love the fact that this was a story about no matter the age, the phase, the time of your life, it's never too late to go for your dreams. It's never too late to reinvent. It's never too late to keep becoming more of yourself. I love that message. I love that it was a story about two women and their inner lives and not necessarily them trying to find men, and that the story was not about they ride off on the horse with the guy.
And not fighting over a man either.
They weren't fighting over a man. They actually were on parallel paths, both of them, fighting up against what the world expects of them and who they want to be in the world. And those things were really interesting to me.
Let's give a quick plot synopsis for those who haven't watched it. Y'all should watch it. What's the best way to set it up? You play a pop star.
I play sort of an iconic music star that's had decades of hits, that's at a point in her career when the world wants her to just kind of coast. Her record company wants her to coast, but she has more that she wants to do. And then her assistant is a young girl who is in awe of her icon boss and wants to really be a music producer, but there's so few female music producers within the industry, which I did not even realize. And she's fighting against this idea that everyone thinks she should be getting them coffee when she really wants to be a producer. And so on parallel paths, the two of them are kind of finding their way.
What I found really interesting, and for me the most powerful scene, is when you and Dakota Johnson's character are having somewhat of a fight after that meeting with the execs. It's like in the bathroom.
All right, I get it. I know what you're thinking. I'm a sellout. I get it. That was humiliating.
You lay out the ways in which, after a certain time, the machine likes to spit women out.
In the history of music, only five women over 40 have ever had a number one hit, and only one of them was Black.
Especially Black women, and gets over them and gets tired of them.
We could pretend that we live in some sort of magical world where, I don't know, let's see, age and race are not a thing.
And hearing you give that line in the movie, it was so authentic. But I also thought of all the times in interviews where the first thing they say about you right now is, usually a star of Tracy Ellis Ross's age sees their career decline, but not her. I can't tell you how many articles start that way about you.
So stupid.
I'm glad they note it, but are you tired of that? Are you tired of that?
I mean, you know what? It's the same thing when people say, like, are you tired of people asking you about, you know, are you single? Do you want to be single or whatever? And I feel like it's all, each question, each time it comes, is an opportunity to expand someone's idea of what the world should be, what should be expected of women, of people, of anyone. It's so silly. Everybody has all these ideas, the status quo of, you know, by this age, you're done. By this age, you should be married. By this age, you should have 3.2 kids and a dog and a car in the car park. I mean, like, what is it, 1950? Like, enough already. You know what I mean? I'm like, you should be, guys don't cry. And girl, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's just, it's so lazy. It's so lazy, in my opinion. And yeah, I'm 47 years old and I'm the hottest I've ever been. I'm the most comfortable in my skin I've ever been. I feel the sexiest I've ever felt. I know more than I've ever known. I have a bigger and more compassionate heart than I've ever had. I understand the things I don't know. I'm happy to name the limits of my own knowledge. Like, I mean, come on, what do you want? Yeah. When we go back to being 22? No, thank you. You know what I mean? Yeah, the skin was tighter under my arms, but I didn't know nothing. And everything scared the hell out of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would way prefer to be holding this. But yeah, we still live in a world where ageism, sexism, racism, they are alive and well. And I'm grateful to have a platform and to be in a position where I can continue to dispel those ridiculous ideas and comfortably state, nah, I'm going to keep reinventing myself. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, look at these people around us. I mean, look at Michelle Obama. Look at my mom. Look at Jennifer Lopez. Look at Sanaa Lathan. Look at Gabrielle Union. Look at what? Like, I mean, the list goes on.
Yes. They're Highlanders. They're eternal. They can keep doing this stuff forever and let them be what they want to be.
Seriously. Yeah. And why should anybody? Why you get to a certain age and you get to stop dreaming? Like, what's that about?
Preach it.
You know,
preach
and also, by the way, I've never, you know, I understood how joy was revolutionary. Like, people used to always say that. But in this context, right now, what we are in right now, I understand how Black joy is revolutionary in the face of racism. I understand how continuing to dream in the face of racism, in the face of the limitation, in the face of the words like diversity and like all those kinds of things, that being your whole self, being your full self, fighting and protesting or pushing and being awake can still be held alongside of joy, passion, love, connection, softness, that the fullness of our humanity gets to be all of those things. And we don't have to turn one off in order to make space for another. The same way Black people are not a monolithic group of people. We're not all the same. I also, you know, each of us have all these spaces to who we are. And my job, I feel like my sort of mode of operating in life is walking towards wholeness, not perfection. Perfection is so boring.
Time for a break. When we come back, Tracy talks about portraying Black joy on screen and challenging stereotypes. You are playing, you know, this role in the movie where it is not a stereotypical portrayal of a Black woman.
You.
It is a Black woman that we usually see played by, like, the white diva. But you get to be the diva, and you get to be the one in charge, and you get to be the one on stage. And it's like, all of that should be allowed. What I see a lot, particularly in moments like these, a lot of white heads of studios, the only version of us that they want to put on a screen is us in pain and us suffering. And I appreciate how you've used your career to say, no, I can be all of these different things. And part of me being on screen and being my full self is also showing that joy.
Yeah, the joy and the, you know, it's one of the things that drew me to Bo Johnson on Black-ish is that she is thriving.
Yeah.
She's not surviving. And
come on.
I understand because the experience, there is brutality, there is violence, there is oppression, there is suppression, there is all, there is incarceration. But I don't think any of us need to allow that to become the whole experience. That's what we're fighting against.
Or our whole narrative.
Or our whole narrative. The more we get to name and see our experience, our legacy, our history, the reality of our lives, because it is not in textbooks, it's not taught in school, the more we get to own that, see that for others, but also for ourselves, we get to heal. Because we've had to decontextualize who we are constantly in everything we do, just constantly taking it out of context as if we are these lone little islands walking around and as if we're crazy for feeling the way we're feeling and constantly gaslit. As if it's like, no, this is real. This is real. And there is a reason that these feelings erupt. You know, I don't know. I mean, God, I can't stop talking. Sorry.
No, I love it. This is gold. Keep on. Keep preaching. I'm into it.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
But yeah, it's like we should be able to get to be everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to continue to challenge this notion that white viewing audiences might be scared to watch it. No, they're not. They're actually pretty curious.
They're really curious. And also, you know, our freedom keeps being dismantled and limited because of white comfort.
Exactly. And like I spent a life growing up, watching so much TV and totally inhabiting the stories and lives of characters from shows like Cheers
you.
And Frasier.
That look nothing like you.
And if I can do that and attach to them...
So can you.
White people are the same species as me. They can do the same in reverse.
And I always say that about Black-ish. It's the story of an American family.
Yeah. I want to dip back into music for a bit the movie.
Dip it.
Yes. Yes. When did you tell your mom you were doing this? And did you involve her in that process at all? I imagine that adds another level of anxiety.
Well, that was the main level of anxiety because I thought people were going to compare me to her and there's no way I could ever be her, you know? But I realized somewhere on the way through that it wasn't my job to be her or anybody but myself, and that that's actually what soul is. My job was to actually share my soul. In terms of my mom and telling her, I remember telling her that I got this movie I had really wanted, but I didn't tell her I was singing in the movie. Not on purpose, I just didn't. I talked to my mom 100 times a day, but I somehow, we don't always talk about business and work stuff. I don't know what we're talking. I say this all the time. I don't know what we talk about all the time. Talk about food. What'd you make for dinner? Can I drop off something? Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. We just talk about other things. So I didn't tell her that. Finally, after we had recorded enough of the demo tracks and I felt like I was kind of gaining my footing a little bit, I was like, Mom, I'm ready for you to hear. She's like, what? And I was like, the song. She was like, okay. So by then she knew. And I picked her up in my car. Listening to music in the car is always great because you're in sort of, you know, an enclosed space with speakers. So I picked her up. We sat in my car in her driveway and she sat in the passenger seat and we were holding hands on the, you know, the little thing in between the armrest. And then she finally, you know, she's got a lot of hair. So I couldn't see her face when she was looking forward. And then she kind of finally turned to me and her face was covered in tears. And she just looked at me and said, finally. Yeah, we were crying. It was crazy.
Moms.
My mom is one of those parents that really, she just allows us our process. She never pushes and doesn't sort of put her, my mom has lived out her life pretty fully, so she doesn't have to live much out through us. So she just really kind of, she's like right here, kind of like, what can I do? How can I help? What can I do?
Yeah.
And
I
then
love
she,
it. I love
yeah.
it. Put you out there. One of the things the film made me think about was like, it is totally unfair for there not to be already a T. Murda album. I'm talking about.
I think it's really fair that there isn't because I do not come by rap skills and lyricism, honestly. Okay? This is a stretch and a reach for Tracee Ellis Ross.
I like it though. We should say so T. Murda is your rap alter ego.
Yes.
Who every now and then pops up in the social media. But as I was watching The High Note, I kept saying to myself, maybe T. Murda will pop up. What rap song would T. Murda make right now?
Oh, my God. That's the thing. T. Murda only does other people's songs. Like, T. Murda's never done her own song. Like, I would need to, T. Murda would be, she would be all up over the Shade Room with people saying that I had ghostwriters. T. Murda has got, like, oh God, I don't know. You know what? Like Nicki Minaj and Cardi B and Lil' Kim and Foxy Brown, they're all my ghostwriters. They're T. Murda's ghostwriters.
That sounds like a great album. That
you know
needs
what?
To be in my 2021.
Yeah, if that's an album, then they should. They don't need T. Murda. You know what I mean? Like, they don't need me. I need them.
Well, I just had to ask because I like T. Murda.
I think that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah. On that note, this was an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Tracee Ellis Ross, thank you so much. I really enjoyed that. I appreciate you, and I cannot wait for that T. Murda album. Listeners, Tracee's film, The High Note, is out right now. You can catch it at home, on demand, and watch Tracee Ellis Ross sing. All right, this episode was produced by Anjali Sastry, and it was edited by Jordana Hokeman. We're back in your feeds Friday. Till then, listeners, be good to yourselves. We'll talk soon.